Hey, welcome to Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer. I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Jay Kang. In this show, this is actually a follow-up first to last week's episode about Augur. After that show came out, a lot of news broke about Augur assassination markets, and we had to discuss it. And we decided to make a market of our own. I loaded some REP, R-E-P, those are the tokens of Augur, into my account so I could make my own bet and open it up to you bettors. If you want to know what the bet was, you will have to listen, but it's live now, and if you're on Augur, you can come wager on CoinTalk's exclusive custom proprietary betting market. We also talked to some friends. Jay had to go, but I talked to them. Coin Yeezy and Crypto Randy Marsh. They are colorful Twitter crypto personalities who I probably originally followed to listen in on their trades, but I found out they were working on projects, collectible cards on the Ethereum blockchain. They are now running Honey Miner, which is like a really easy way to use an old computer to mine. So we wanted to hear about people who are actually doing things on the blockchain. They also are really long-standing people in the space who've had a lot of different eras of crypto under their belts. This show is brought to you, of course, by Medium. You can find out all about the crypto writing on Medium by going to me.dm/crypto. You can become a member for $5 a month. Also sponsoring the show this week, it's the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast. We'll tell you more about that mid-show. You can always get in touch, hi@cointalk.show. Here's the show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Thursday, July 26th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,210.
Jay, we set the world on fire with our Augur episode.
We did?
People can't stop talking about Augur.
Wait,
taking credit for it. I have no reason to believe our show had anything to do with it.
Okay, we're basically just saying that because people are talking about Augur, it must be because of us.
That is what I'm saying.
All right, I like that.
Yes. Yeah. We must have juiced the market. Coin Talk listeners everywhere, thanks to our easy 17 or 18 step tutorial, have downloaded the Ethereum chain through Infura, transferred Ethereum into their MetaMask account, and are betting like wild men. No, I mean, there's actually not that much more volume on Augur than there was when we taped the episode. It's still kind of a ghost town.
Was Brian Ledger's status able to connect ever?
I believe he is still stuck in the high 80s percentage-wise. So maybe the universe is saying something and saying it's not for him.
Well, I actually, on my drive over here, I was actually thinking a lot about Augur, and I actually am kind of more bullish on it than I was last episode.
I am too. So many people seem interested in it, and since I'm the only one who's actually synced the chain and made a bet, I feel like I should just become an Augur bookie.
Yeah, well, you're like yeah, exactly. You could be like, can you not connect to Augur? Everyone would be like, yes, I can. Would you like to place bets?
Yeah, and then you pay me cash. I lay the bets in Ethereum.
You get 20%
Everyone's money gets a little washed. So everything works out well. So the main story about Augur that's been going around in the lame streamer media is about these assassination markets that have emerged on Augur.
Yeah, and that was going to be inevitable.
Yeah.
And I actually have two arguments. I mean, look, the general response has been the pearl clutching, I think, about, you know, oh no, crypto does it again. They've done something unseemly and terrible. I actually think that, well, first of all, I think that, you know, a decentralized market is a decentralized market, and it's going to have some good, it's going to have some bad,
yeah,
right? And this isn't like even a platform like Reddit, where people start arguing, oh, the whole thing is overtaken by these sort of right-wing trolls or whatever. Like, I've always been a bit agnostic on whether or not that really is Reddit's problem. Like, when at the point where there people are doing stuff that's illegal, like creep shots or like teenage photos, sure, you know? But saying like, oh, well, everyone is like a right-wing, like a Pepe-loving anarchist, and that's bad. And it's like, well, I don't know. Like, you know, like those people should be able to talk somewhere.
I should say that later in the show, I'm going to do an interview with Coin Yeezy and Crypto Randy Marsh, two colorful crypto Twitter personalities. There's some Pepe talk. I'm just going to warn you, if you're triggered by it, there is some Pepe talk. The Pepe does make me a little uncomfortable, honestly, but I didn't voice that in the interview.
That's okay. We are coin moderates, as
We're coin moderates.
All we care about is civility in the crypto space.
Which ironically makes us extremist in coin world.
That's true. That is true.
We're like the radical moderate wing of coin world.
Yeah, we're like basically if everybody in America was a DSA socialist and we voted for Hillary Clinton.
Does it make me not a crypto moderate that I kind of agree with you? And I'm like, yeah, of course people are going to make some like bets on the assassination markets. For starters, the market is not, will you go out and assassinate person X? It's, will this person get assassinated? These are the kinds of things that DARPA wanted to do around terrorist events. And this is like one of the logical outcomes of a prediction market is that it might in some ways predict world events.
Yeah. And I think that that's the main defense of it here, which is that a prediction market only exists, as we've said in the past couple episodes, but you know, I should repeat, it only exists because the Department of Defense wanted to figure out where the next terrorist attack was. And so if things are going to have any predictive value, and you are saying that the people who are going to be involved and perhaps most incentivized by snitching people out might be doing things that aren't great, you know, like what is like the, you know, if you're like, well, we'll like, you know, like a reasonably recent example would be like, are Facebook earnings going to be really bad, right?
Yeah.
There are not that many Facebook employees that would know that. And then instead of just selling their stock or telling other people to sell their stock, which is also illegal, that they would actually be like, what I should do is I should find a prediction market and bet heavily into it, or I should create a prediction market. But things that are a little more underworld, things that like have liquidity problems because they're illegal, like actually maybe this is a place where a prediction market might actually be predictive. Now, if your argument is that the person is profiting from knowledge that someone is going to be assassinated or something terrible is going to happen to somebody, I would say that, you know, like, I would say that that sort of stuff happens all the time. But my second argument would be that, like,
these political assassinations happen all the time.
Not the assassinations, but that people profit off of, like, bad knowledge. Like, oh, it happens all the time. But secondly, I would also say that the general, like, good that can be done from knowing these types of things or having at least some sort of clue come in is much higher than the cost of some, you know, guy who might not actually have anything to do with it but just knows something to place a bet on all of that. So I am not of the, you know, alarmist vision of any of this. And I do think that the lamestream media folks who did point this out, you know, it did feel a little bit unfair to crypto just to pick out the worst ones and then say the whole market is like this.
I mean, I'm going to take the opposite tact, which is, first of all, I don't think it's bad for Augur at all. Like, I think, like,
no, it was free
a
PR.
A lot of people heard about Augur this week as a result of this. Right now, the volume is such on Augur that no one's going to do a political assassination for the, like, 170 Ethereum at stake, you know? The stakes are pretty modest. And I think this is true also. You see this potentially in, like, weird prop bets in, like, sports, where it's like, man, if there was $100 million riding on this prop bet, it would be very easy to manipulate.
Yeah.
However, with a limited fund, and the way that they handle that with prop bets is they just cap them and they're not allowing a ton of action on prop bets, I'm going to get worried about these assassination markets when the sum attached to them is such that you're like, oh, I could see someone killing someone for that much money.
Sure. Like, they only work in terms of having bad actors manipulate them purposefully and then create the outcome. That almost never happens, right? Like,
yeah.
Because the amount of money has to be so prohibitive, like the or so incentivized that the person decides to potentially destroy their life to do this. So, like, an example would be like a prop bet in the NBA or something like that. If LeBron James has like 8 turnovers, is maybe that's over under on a or like let's say 6 turnovers.
Yeah,
and the most you can bet is like $2,000. In Vegas, and like, do you really think LeBron James at like 5 turnovers is gonna chuck the ball out of bounds? Like, no, you know, like that's an incentive issue. Now, that's on a scale that's different than these assassination marks, but at the same time, you know, like it's a lot easier for LeBron James to throw the ball out of bounds than to like assassinate somebody or to blow something up. And so, I find the sort of alarm over this to be way out of whack with the way in which this actually will function. And I think that, like, you know, like, you could argue it be, with existing political markets that are, that prediction markets that track very small elections, you know, someone could throw that election or someone could rig that election and be like, well, it's really not that easy to rig an election.
And yes, people do rig elections mostly to gain power.
Yeah, not to win $300 in Ethereum on Augur.
So I was thinking about what kind of a market does make sense. I think these assassination markets are joke markets, and for that reason, they'll never attract serious volume, so they're not a serious problem.
Yeah, they're trolls.
And then I was like, okay, well, why? It's like, well, it's too much to kill a political figure to sway an Augur market. And I'm like, what kind of information would really leak out? I don't believe a political assassination plot would leak out into the betting, but what would be like a salacious piece of news? And so I was like, okay, I'm going to make my first market. On the previous show, you and I laid a bet, but we stopped short of actually making a market.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about making a market is that you can charge a fee. And if the market becomes really popular, then you own, in this case, I took a 1% fee on this market. And the market is, will a P-tape of Donald Trump emerge before the end of his first term?
You made this market.
I made this market on Augur. Okay. It's currently live. If you can log on to Augur, you can bet on it now. We'll put the link in the show notes. We'd love to see some action.
We will also take your action.
I'm going to say, if you want to support this show, put a little money behind this here. And so we're going to assume that this market, for the time being, is going to be, you know, 99.999% no, right? 99% no? Where would you set the line? Right,
okay,
now?
What is the actual wording of the market?
Okay, I'm gonna read it. I'm gonna log back onto the chain, Jay.
Okay, so we're gonna play Muzak for the next 20 minutes.
Just gonna log into my MetaMask account, and then I'm gonna go to my portfolio, and I'm gonna look at my markets. Okay, will a P-tape featuring Donald Trump emerge before the end of his first term?
Ooh, okay.
Now, the wording, I agree, could have been more specific.
What does a P-tape emerge mean?
I give in the notes a further explanation that an average person with internet access through the news media, through a Reddit, would have been able to personally view a tape involving Donald Trump and urine.
Okay, here's my problem with it, right? Yeah. If I went to the bathroom in the crypto cave and filmed myself peeing.
Please don't.
And then I put Donald Trump's face somewhere in the video, like through Photoshop or whatever, does that count as a P-tape?
No, we can reasonably assume that if the media identifies the tape as a fake, then it does not satisfy the terms of the bet.
Okay, but this is...
If you fool the media, then it counts.
This is a decentralized market. Like, your rules mean nothing.
But the rules are set off in the notes. There is, like, further about how...
Oh, there are rules in the notes. Okay.
Yeah. There's a notes field here about how it's going to be settled. And it'll be settled by me. You can trust me.
Yeah, but what if I have 51%... What if I just buy a bunch of rep and overrule you and say that my Crypto Cave P Donald Trump tape is the real tape, or that it should qualify?
Okay, we're going down a rabbit hole here.
No. This is one of the problems with
Well, okay. I agree. Some of the more interesting questions are also ones that are harder to judge. But I think you basically understand this question.
Okay, so let's take the premise in good faith.
Yeah, in good faith. Okay. In good faith. And there may not be action on this because people are too worried that the topic is subjective, which I think would be a fair criticism.
You're going 90%, 99% no?
This is not just a tape is proven to exist, but it's viewable.
I am going to go, I would, if it was 99%, I would bang the yes.
Ooh.
Because you're getting amazing odds
Kang,
at that point.
Kang, okay, so you're interested in like 100-1 that it emerges.
Yeah, because if like there's rumors of it and our market is active, in the best case scenario,
yeah,
then it could swing to $0.04. And at that point, I've quadrupled my earnings and I could just cash out at that point.
I agree with you. And my hypothesis about the value of this market is that if there was a P-tape circulating, like often a lot of these stories, when you look at the stories like Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, these have been circulating in journalistic circles for months before they come out. Journalists are poor. I think if we can get enough people into the auger market, I don't think someone's going to leak the tape, but I think someone's going to say, wow, I know people who've seen the tape, and that means like at 100-1, I'm going to bang that, and it's going to swing up to, 96, 95, 94.
Counterpoint.
Yeah.
Journalists are really bad at technology and will not be able to sign on to Augur.
But their nerd Bitcoin friends who they like get drunk with at a bar.
Are you talking about you?
Yeah. are gonna hear about it, and they're going to, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to push the market to 50-50, but if you see the market going up a few ticks, I mean, could also happen from publicly available news, which is if the P-tape heavily starts figuring into the news again, I think we're going to see the market move.
Yeah.
Well, it currently has a volume of zero, so that's a negative thing. I can't really figure out how to get this market out of the muck. It's like, I can't get it onto the front page of Reddit, so I can't get any upvotes.
Can you pay to,
There's no paid market placement. The only thing I can do is shill my market hard on the show right now. So when you get on Augur, search P-tape and try to locate this, or look at my link in the show notes, which I think has a unique URL, and try to put a little action on this. If you got, I'm not asking you to put a lot, put a few bucks on it. Let's get this going.
I think that most of the votes then at that point would come. Like, the problem with low market, one person, if the volume is zero and one person votes yes, then the whole thing is going to be out of whack.
What is?
The price will be like crazy. And so then everybody will incentivize to bet against that on no, which is good because then it'll get closer to the real values. But we do need a certain threshold of volume. I think we can get. CoinTalk listeners, please, please log on to Augur.
I do wonder about that because it starts at a 50, like at 50% when there's no bet. And I don't really understand how the first bet comes in.
Oh, you can't set it.
You can seed it with a bet. And I did seed it with a bet, but I don't really understand until there's actually you can't buy the shares yourself. Someone has to be the first person to buy shares. So I think maybe you could go in and say, hey, I want to put an ask at 95. Right at 0.95.
Yeah.
And I could be like, I will put in a bid at 0.99. And then that would be like the spread to start, and people could buy and sell against those anchors.
Got it.
But it seems to me like almost like there has to be two bets to show a range. I don't know. I don't understand how it works. If you're listening, you understand this better than we do, send us an email, hi@cointalk.show.
All right. So was it fun to make this market?
It was. Well, so the funny thing is I made the market and I got to the very last button and it was just grayed out. No instructions as to why I couldn't click it. And then I was like, I kind of remember hearing that you're supposed to have rep if you want to make a market. So I transferred some rep from Bittrex to my MetaMask account.
Was that hard?
No, it's pretty easy. It's just a cent. Withdraw it to the address. Because rep's an ERC-20 token, it's the same Ethereum address that I've already sent to when I sent the Ethereum.
How long did it take?
5 minutes.
How much panic did you have that you were doing it wrong?
It was such a small amount, it didn't really trip me up. I think I transferred in 5 rep, which is like $150, and I transferred one, and then I transferred the rest. So, you pay a little fee. It's kind of like an exorbitant. I think the fee is like 0.1 rep or something per transfer, but...
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. But then making the market is also like, they do have things in place where it's like, I did pay to make this market, or I like put like an escrow of rep into the market. So like that market will be holding my rep until 2021.
Yeah.
And theoretically I could build up some rewards if this market ever gets going. So Jay, I think we should seed some markets out there and see what kind of good stuff we can get into.
Yeah,
any suggestions? I've still got about 5.5 more rep to pump into here.
I don't know what, like, the things that seem popular are all crypto related, right? The politics stuff hasn't really taken off.
And people have camped on like every crypto bet. It's like Bitcoin over 8,000, Bitcoin over 9,000 on January 1st. Bitcoin, it's like people have like flooded it with like all possible bets.
Okay. So those are like, we're going to be lost in the
I think there's still some creative crypto bets out there. Like, about the like drama and the Tezos Foundation or something, or like I think there's some good personal bets out there if we could get some money on like something about Will Roger Ver blank, you know, that could be interesting. But I think the more ones that mimic futures and derivatives purely based on price are pretty well camped on.
All right, so we need to then look at the second currency within the crypto space, which is virality and memes. Right?
Yes.
So we have to somehow get the people that we know who have large crypto followings involved in some way that is probably trolly.
Yes.
But not Pepe trolly.
Well, that's why I thought the P-tape was a good place to start, because I thought it had like a little, you know, pep to it. But if we could do something that's like P-tape, but it's also crypto, that's the Venn diagram
I'm trying
to land.
So it would be like, will there be a parabolic Trav P tape?
Parabolic Trav is not famous enough though. Like I'd like to
will
be
there
like
be a Craig Wright.
Like P-tape? Things that Vitalik tweets would be a good market.
That is one, yeah.
Who are like the major figures who like move markets themselves?
Well, Vitalik, obviously.
I think some Elon Musk markets could do well.
Oh, wait, that's a good one. Will Elon Musk quit Twitter by the end of 2018?
Fantastic one. Yeah. I think that any of the, it's not so much crypto itself, it's people that crypto people are interested in are strong markets.
Yeah, I agree with that. So Elon Musk is definitely one. I think that we could probably do a lot of stuff around Facebook as well and Twitter. So social networks that get a lot of play anyway. Something like the nice thing about something like the Elon Musk one is that we could also get like media people who hate Elon Musk to also talk about it, you know?
I wonder if we've really exhausted the like things Trump tweet will tweet markets.
Well,
I think
those
are
also
rich.
Are all over the regular prediction markets.
Oh, are they? Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
yeah. So you can actually bet almost every single day on how many tweets Trump will send out that day.
Okay, so here's a useful thought exercise. Let's take what America as a whole bets on in prediction markets and what's popular and sort of triangulate that to the strange crypto person worldview. So what generally does well on prediction markets?
It's all politics stuff.
Politics, yeah.
So like elections.
Is crypto interested in mainstream political elections? Not really.
I don't think so. I mean, there are parts of crypto that are interested in like far right elections, but we don't want to dabble in that.
I mean, it would have been really interesting if Augur had been around like around the time of the Bcash fork, when it was like really unclear what direction. That's when I think Augur will be really interesting, is when there's going to be a big decision coming up in the crypto world. I wonder what people would have bet the line of whether people went to the 2X chain or not. Because I remember the sort of hype was, oh yeah, people are going to go for the big blockers. And I would have thought that they were the big blockers were favorites.
Oh, I have one.
Sure.
That's perfect for crypto. Sure. What will Brian Kelly on CNBC shill next?
Right.
Yeah, so it's stuff like that where it's very trolly. And everybody is sort of waiting around to make fun of Brian Kelly.
Now, these markets are out there, but I'm surprised there's not more action on the what coins will Coinbase add markets. Because that's the kind of thing I think there's clearly insider information circulating on. Coinbase is clearly trying to fight insider information. So Coinbase employees definitely can't like go their old route of just buying the coins anymore.
Yeah.
But I do expect that intel to leak to the market in some way.
Guess what company where like 100% of the people probably will know how to make an Augur account? Coinbase.
And I also would imagine that, you know, if it works for Coinbase, getting some deeper insight into like what product roadmaps for Gemini for these exchanges are. It's interesting. You can't really make a prediction market for information that you don't know yet. It's hard to set these snares of future markets until a situation like that, like 2X fork, appears on the horizon. That feels like the real opportunity.
Yeah.
When a betting moment emerges.
Yeah. So let's just keep our powder dry at this point then, and wait for one of those and see if we can pounce on them. Do you think that's a better strategy, or do you think we should just seed them now so that when people search for them that they'll be out there?
I don't think many people are searching for markets right now.
It's
I think
just
people are browsing
pops up.
Markets. Okay. Yeah, that's my impression. But that's not necessarily true for the long term. I think the reason people are browsing markets is because there's no real media for the markets. There's no like There's no one blogging about what the cool markets are.
You can't use...
That's maybe what we should do is publicize the cool markets.
You can't use your rep to publicize your own market.
Not presently, although okay. That's a good idea. Market advertising?
Yeah, well, that it would kind of be like, you know, like the old days of Reddit when you could, you know, whatever karma that you got, you could leverage into more power on the platform.
If I was running predictions.global, which is the like web interface for Augur, I would put some sort of an editor's pick section that was curated
by you.
Markets. Yeah.
That maybe was all your bets.
Maybe we should just make that ourselves and then stack it with our own bets.
Or we could just make a public facing site that gives Augur bets, you know, like yep. five best Augur bets of the day. And yeah. then
the Augurist.
And then just put all our bets in it.
Okay. For people listening, send us what you think the best bet, the most interesting bets are.
Yeah, we'll read them on the show.
And maybe we'll make some of them. It's a fundraiser for the show. It's all for a good cause.
Is it a good cause?
Okay, I'm going to go do this interview. Jay's got to do something else. We'll be back with you soon. Hey, I'm going to pause things here briefly to give you a word from our sponsor. I really appreciate their sponsorship. It's TechMeme. Perhaps you've been to techmeme.com. It's a great place to go a few times a day to find out what you have missed in the world of tech. This show tries to keep you up to date about crypto. Would you like a similar show? Not really, actually, that similar, more like professional and informative about tech itself. TechMeme has a podcast. It is called the TechMeme Ride Home Podcast. It's Monday through Friday around 5 p.m. Eastern each afternoon, about 15 to 20 minutes long. They talk about the top tech stories of the day, the top tweets, top conversations around the stories. It's really good if you're obsessive about this stuff, which I would guess a good number of people listening to this show are. The host is Brian McCullough, who also hosts the Internet History Podcast, which has been running for the last 4 years. I generally would describe it as something like NPR's Marketplace, but for tech news. So here's what I want you to do. Go in your podcast app, search for TechMeme, that's TechMeme, Ride Home, and subscribe to it. It'll be in your inbox Monday through Friday, maybe on your commute, wherever you listen to podcasts, it will be waiting for you. Thanks, TechMeme. Here's the show. Welcome, Crypto Randy Marsh and Coin Yeezy. I'm going to call you Yeezy and Randy. Is that okay?
Sounds good. Absolutely.
Does living this like dual life where you're like a cartoon crypto trader on Twitter and then you're a real person cause friction in your lives at all?
Yeah. This is actually a really funny question that Yeezy and I talk about a lot. But as far as friction goes, I wouldn't say friction, but it's definitely funny to go to meetups in New York and everyone kind of looks at you like you're nobody until they find out that you're this like popular meme account on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
it's a wild experience to like walk into a room, you know, and there's people there that may follow you on Twitter or wherever and they don't know it. So when they see you, they're like, who the heck is this guy? You know, he's coming into pretend like he knows crypto or whatever, and they kind of discount you. But your meme value in the digital world can be so much greater than your real life like value in that room, right?
It's something that I think about a lot in terms of how particularly people who are trading and giving like altcoin calls and that kind of stuff, the fact that they're detached from these real life identities gives it such a different tenor than it would if people were just like John Smith, like of Syracuse, New York. Like how much does this coin world stuff overlap with your day-to-day life outside of it?
I think for me personally, it's pretty strong. And Randy and I work together on a lot of, yeah. of projects and just spend a lot of time kind of talking and sharing dialogue and thoughts. And it's a really strong overlap on, you know, maybe it's seemingly there's a physical and a digital world, but in reality, the things that we perpetuate on Twitter are very much my real thoughts. You know, it's very much the thought catalog that I carry with me throughout my day, right?
Yeah.
So it's a pretty powerful thing, a pretty cool experiment, really.
How long did it take each of you from when you first started hearing about and toe dipping into crypto to the point where it became a significant part of your work life?
For me, the moment I dipped my toes into crypto, it became a significant part of my life. It wasn't until last month or 2 months ago that it became my work life, which is amazing. You know, I would spend hours at work studying and tweeting and studying and tweeting for 8 months until it became my full-time gig.
Yeah.
Yeezy, I think you have
an answer. Randy, it was probably like really with Honeyminer and PepeDap is when it was like full-time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty. But for me, I've been involved with and really just curious in general about Bitcoin and related technology, blockchain, et cetera, for probably since 2012, I had first heard about it.
Yeah.
So I've been really involved building projects that were crypto related, working on communities and ideas in the space for quite a few years now. It's just that now things are kind of coming to fruition. So I have a software background, and it was really easy for me to use my free time or even time with projects at work to overlap with crypto and, of course, like get all my business partners and stuff and into this idea of Bitcoin and mining and any other ideas that kind of came out from that. I have a Twitter account from many years ago, but I just started the CoinEasy account really right around the time that Randy did, a little bit before. I know he and I were connected and we were kind of talking about crypto Twitter before it got this big. But I just kind of started the CoinEasy account maybe 1 year ago, roughly. But many, many years of Bitcoin ingrained in me at this point.
So for people listening who don't waste their entire life on Twitter, you're doing the right thing. You're probably happier for it. But they may not be familiar with kind of culture that has arisen out of this kind of like meme-y, jokey trader / Bitcoin world, in which, especially I would say during the last bull run, some of these accounts started to attract a lot of followers. It's a way I think a lot of new people who come in kind of orient themselves, not just around what are these coins, how does all this stuff work, but also what are the different tribes within crypto? Who are these Ripple people? Who are these shitcoin traders? There's a whole anthropology to it. And what caught me about what both of you are doing is there's a lot of people out there who are trying to build up their Twitter follower accounts or be the first person on a low cap shitcoin call. But you guys have built like actual products that people can use, can download, they work. There isn't a ton of stuff being made, or if it is, I'm kind of missing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of us were kind of inspired by Satoshi in that, you know, he developed this world-changing technology and took no, you know, credit for it personally and, you know, kind of created a meme out of himself in order to perpetuate this technology to the world. We've both been involved in building for many, many years now. So when it came time to, you know, dip our toes into, you know, crypto products, which was definitely the direction that I knew I wanted to go in, we kind of just said, hey, why not run with it, you know, as a meme account? You know, Satoshi did it, essentially.
Yeah, totally true. When Randy and I connected and realized like, hey, you know, we're friends, but there's more, you know, we have ideas that, and we have like abilities that we can execute on, right? There was never a question, and there never has been for me personally, that I'm a trader or an investor or whatever. You know, I'm just not interested. I'm not even interested in the label. I'm not interested in spending my time of my days that way. And we've been really headstrong about building. And we built when it was a bull. We were building when it's a bear. You know, Honeyminer, PepeDap, CoinDex, Whale Reports, Crypto Aquarium. You could keep on going and going down this list, right? I mean, we don't, whether the price is up or down does not matter to us. We're focused, you know, independently and jointly to try to build things that people can actually use and can actually make their day better. You know, even if that's a portfolio watching app, that may sound kind of funny, but the goal is that we're trying to build up this network of people that can build things with us, can help us get the word out and continue to get experience to build the next better thing, right? I mean, Randy, I think you got to agree here. When we started out, we definitely weren't expecting to be pumping out projects like mining software, like Honeyminer.
Definitely not.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. This is kind of like it's a pretty broad mix of stuff you're doing. This isn't like a miner for Ethereum and a miner for Zcash. This is like a magazine and a collectible card game and a GUI that you can mine from old PCs. These are pretty disparate skill sets.
Yeah, and that's the plan. I mean, you nailed it, Aaron. Like, this is a portfolio, right? And we're trying to get across all of these touch points. And one thing we'd really like to do moving forward too, kind of giving you a hint, haven't really found the right spot yet, but would love to start developing hardware, and that whether it's actual computer hardware or things like digital storage or, you know, like a Trezor or things like this. So like, there's much more to come in from the sense of like, we're really trying to be obtuse about our approach and kind of create our own little universe of products and people. And, you know, Randy and I get maybe a little bit of the Twitter fame for this, but we have like, all these projects have a lot of people behind them, a lot of development power, a lot of marketing, a lot of like operational and scaling we're going through that right now with Honeyminer. You know, we're very small when it comes down to actually like looking at the business and all the people and all the working pieces. You know, we do get the Twitter fame, but there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. These are legit businesses that we're building.
I think it should be said also that there's kind of no limit to the things that we are interested in building, as long as they are aligned with our kind of morals. And, you know, I think this is a little bit cliche, but, you know, our goal is to, you know, perpetuate decentralization and blockchain technology to the world. And I think that, you know, I could speak for both Yeezy and I when I say that this stuff is important to us.
Yeah.
We really do think that we can change, you know, the way that things work, because systems are broken and we're seeing that all over the place.
Can you guys explain for people who haven't checked out Honeyminer, just like in a nutshell, what it is, what it does?
For sure. It's a really simple app that you download on your computer. Right now it's for Windows. We have Mac and Linux coming really soon. So hold tight, everybody. We've been asked that question a lot. But you download this app, honeyminer.com, and it takes about, you know, 10 seconds to get on your computer. You open up the file, you toggle it on, and that's basically it. The app now is working for you. It's connected to your GPU and your CPU, and it's figuring out, okay, what kind of hardware do you have? What's the most profitable algorithm? Because every coin has some kind of algorithm, you know, if it depends on mining to work. It'll start mining that profitable coin, let's say Ethereum or Ethereum Classic, and Honeyminer will then, you know, borrow your computer and then pay you in Bitcoin, actually. So it's a super simple ease of use play into mining. There are softwares out there that do similar stuff. What we're trying to do is really cover the spread of like, your grandma can mine, all the way to like pro miner. You have 100 or 1,000 GPUs, and eventually ASICs we're going to integrate as well, where depending whether you have like a home laptop sitting on your couch or you have a large scale mining pool, you can connect into Honeyminer.
And it should be said that that grandmas are using Honeyminer right now.
Oh, yeah. You confirmed grandmas.
Grandmas, mothers, all the way up to great grandmas are using Honeyminer as we speak.
Love it. My own mother, who is now a grandmother because I have a child, lives in California and has solar panels on her roof. And I've been threatening to set up a mining operation in her basement for quite a while because she gets excess power that she sends back to the grid. So
you should.
Now that I know that this is grandmother approved, I'll have a new pitch for her. She also is like a hoarder of old PCs. So it's really a double win. All of the computers that she's failed to throw away for the last 25 years can come back to life.
Amazing.
So I have this theory, and I want you guys to dispute or confirm this theory for me. And this relates to Honeyminer and also the Pepe dApps, which is a collectible card. It's not even a card game. It's just a collectible card on the Ethereum
game's
blockchain.
Game's coming, though.
Oh, game coming. Okay. You heard it here first.
Working on it as we speak.
And my theory on why there aren't a ton of people actually making things other than new coins is that the blockchain is pretty difficult to deal with at this point from a development perspective. And the reason there's not like all sorts of weird, fun little projects coming online is that these things are pretty difficult to make work. So as people who have actually built something that functions and is easy enough that a grandmother could use it, how hard is it to work and build original blockchain applications?
I think that's what you're saying is true to an extent, but I think it's just kind of the matter of time as, you know, developers and it's all about human capital. I use this word a lot, actually. It's human capital development. And there are a lot of people that are capable of doing it and they're just not really incentivized or motivated to do that, right? And that's why you see an ICO. What's the ICO's primary use case is to gather money to try to invent some concept, right? Some white paper idea. And that's where you have developers getting hired up by these guys that maybe came from a traditional web or software background and come in. I think it's, you know, it is difficult and there's like complexities. There are so many things now that are being done in the blockchain space and there's so many different ways of thinking that there isn't a standard of how things can be done. Even, you know, obviously there's standards of like development practices in every language and every setting. And even in like Bitcoin and Ethereum, there are, but it's still being actively developed. Like we did something fun with Pepe Dapp and came up with a proposal for the standard called ERC-420. And that's the idea of like a semi-fungible token. So, and it's something that kind of had been done, but no one's really like put it out there. And we took the opportunity to say, let's just try this. Let's have this fun from a technical perspective. The developer we're working with is just a really talented business-minded guy. And we did. We just went out there and said, all right, let's kind of propose this new idea of a semi-fungible. It's not quite a CryptoKitty. There's some new complexity we're introducing. And I think that it's just such a free space right now to go into and come up with your own ideas that it lacks some standardization. And I think that's for the better, actually. And that sometimes can scare people away.
I think to Aaron's question, I think we got lucky. We had a community of following that was big enough for us to be able to reach into the minds of the crypto people and ask them if any of them have the development capabilities to do the kinds of things that we needed them to do. Whereas I think generally speaking, you know, the only barrier to entry on building on the blockchain is finding developers that know how to do it. And how many developers in, you know, the engineering world are actually working within, you know, this space. And then, you know, you have to get into specifics of which blockchain specifically.
I mean, this is what it was like in iOS development, like shortly after the App Store came out too, where it was like, how many iOS developers are there in America? 500? 60 of them work at Google, you know?
Totally.
Okay, so Randy, you were able to sort of move your work into this stuff, but in terms of like finding people, no one's going to have experience building like an Ethereum collectible card game because that didn't exist a year ago. So is this basically uncharted territory where you're like, how would this work? How would this interact with the Ethereum blockchain?
I mean, it's quite complex. There's a lot to go into if I wanted to there. But I would say that there are people that were learning to work on the Ethereum blockchain, and that was kind of like their main study.
Yeah.
The course of the last year or year and a half. And so, you know, those people, we just kind of gave them a chance. We had about four or five guys that said that they were learning to build on the Ethereum blockchain. We vetted them and we found one that said he could definitely do it. And we ran with it and we developed our standard and we set the rules. Yeah, there's no precedent. I think that's something that we're seeing all over the blockchain. And that's why we're seeing so much complexity and so much noise and cloudiness in the space. I went to a meetup last night where they were talking about ZRX, which is a token governance on top of Ethereum. And there's no precedent for governance. So there's no way for them to know what's right and what's wrong until they experiment with it. And, you know, we don't have 10 years of data to look back on and say, oh, this is what went right and what went wrong. But actually, this is it. We're doing it now. We're finding it out in order to create experience and set precedent for future projects. I don't actually believe that we're going to see 3,000 successful tokenized blockchain projects or however many tokens that exist today. I think that
God, you know, this I hope is, not.
Most of these projects are just, they're here for experimentation and to set future precedent, things that we can look back on and say, oh, this went well and this didn't.
I think that's something that's hard for the general public to wrap its head around, that someone might raise $30, $100 million basically to experiment. And one thing I do find unique about the projects you guys are doing is, so like Honey Miner, you earn money when people mine. You take like a cut. I don't know. It's like a variable cut of a few percentage points, right? What is the fee on Honey Miner?
If you have two GPUs or more, we take a 2.5% fee.
Very simple math. Whether you think that's like really great deal or that's like a lot to give up probably depends on like how pro you are as a miner. But it's pretty like easy to understand how your business works, which is the more people who use it, the more they mine, the more money you make. Now, you could have probably issued a token around an idea that's like that. Is that naive to think? It seems like most people would.
Yeah, it's funny. We've thrown that around. It's not that the token isn't, you know, the idea is that, like, again, I think we just got to give a lot of credit to the Honey Miner team. We just have a really good team, and we're building in that sense too. And it's about the technology, and it's about building the product first and like having some kind of like actual to market, you know, MVP, we call it in the game of software, right? And that's the most important. And we've, whether it's like our Ethereum based projects or projects about blockchain or things like Honey Miner, it's about building the product. And then there's cool things that we could do with having a token, right? Honey Miner could have a honey token.
Right.
It could help do a number of things. It could help us reduce our fees, Bitcoin transaction fees or Ethereum fees when we start to pay out in those and things like that. Yeah, that the token and getting the money is only going to get you so far there, right?
A lot of what we're seeing in the space is tokenization for the sake of fundraising and tokenization for the sake of having a token. And, you know, that's something interesting to think about, you know, is that that these tokens really don't have any real use case for the most part. And even if they do, the app that you're using them on, no one really is using that app, you know?
I used my first utility token this week. I have a grand unified theory about the internet, which is that there's a long drought in things and then things mysteriously all show up at once. So in the last month, I've downloaded Honey Miner, used it to mine, got an old PC going, and another true, like, has a GUI, can be used product came out, which is Augur. And I used the rep token to make a new market in Augur. And I was kind of like, oh, okay. Like, maybe this isn't all bogus.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I just saw in the headlines, you know, all these like hit markets, right? Yes. Where like this person die by this time or like already popping up on there. That's such a hot topic, but like things are coming to life. I'm pro building.
Yeah. Let me ask a question then, because you guys really understand how something like Augur actually interacts with the Ethereum blockchain better, which is, so right now you have to sync an entire Ethereum node to get Augur running, which is like, it's kind of like a hindrance. I would not have my mother try to place a bet on Augur. Is there some sort of a future where someone makes a slick iPhone app that just connects to Augur and in a quarter of a second you can be betting on live football?
Yeah, you have to have a node, like you have to be connected all the time, right, to run it. And that does, like, your mom probably could figure it out, but it wouldn't be a fun process.
Yeah.
That what you can do though is like there'll be companies or services that'll build like an app and they'll host that node for you, right? So you'll use the app.
Right.
It's like a custodial service and you'll just have to rely on them. Yeah, I bet there's like going to be tons of apps, and I bet there's going to be a lot of short-term and long-term ideas coming out where it's, whether it's football, soccer, and Augur integrated and things like that, where you'll be able to do things more real time.
There was an interview with Alexis Ohanian, who's the founder of Reddit and has like a venture firm right now, where he was like, we're focused on like investing in the like people who will be building the like picks and shovels of the crypto economy. And to him, that meant like deep infrastructure, scaling, custodial stuff. But it strikes me that on some level, like what you guys are doing in Honey Miner is also a form of the picks and shovels. Like, you're making it easy for people to start interacting with the economy.
I think what's beautiful about Honey Miner, or one of the things that's beautiful about it, is that when you have Bitcoin in an unbanked, let's say, society, you can open up a whole new economy around Bitcoin and use Bitcoin as the main currency within that, you know, kind of unbanked society, and everyone can have their banks and blah, blah, blah. But the main barrier to entry to that is, how do we get Bitcoin if we don't have, you know, kind of this internet money? Or, I mean, you know, there's money available to them via banks online. So if they have computers, which a lot of these unbanked people do, and access to the internet, they can earn Bitcoin and then, you know, kind of start up this banking system within these places that have no access to banking. So
yeah, I mean, you still rely on, like, you have to have good hardware, right, to make like profit.
And, sure.
But it comes down to, like, before, if you offered your computer, you would have to still have a bank. You'd still have to have a service that gave you dollars. Somehow you'd need to fetch that. And that would be from a bank, right? And Bitcoin just allows for so many different dynamics. And like, and with mining in particular, there's actual like people out there with solar energy, like you were describing, Aaron, and hydropower that can start to use this to like generate new economies. We believe in a future where everybody will have a miner in their home. Their TV will be mining, their computer will be mining, your headphones will be mining, whatever that may be. Everything will be connected. Everything will be offering purpose beyond just like it's basic. I'm going to plug in my headphones and listen to music, right? What does it do when it's not doing that?
And I think it should be said that it's kind of legitimizing the whole thing. Whereas before, your computer might have been mining without you knowing it. If you're, you know, if you were using Showtime, for example, on your computer, they were illegally mining crypto from your computer. Or if you were using one of these torrent websites like Pirate Bay or one of these other ones, they were all mining on your computer before you even knew what mining was. You know, we're going to legitimize, and that, I mean, that's really our kind of
build a safe place too, right? If you want to learn about mining, we're a safe place to go to learn.
Randy, you're like one of, there's a pretty good amount of mainstream coverage of blockchain art now and the idea of creating unique objects on chains and selling them in an art-like manner. And so you've built this like Pepe card game. You both built together Pepe dApps. Without getting into like Pepe and the like memeology of the whole thing, what have you learned about selling unique digital items? And how people actually interact with owning something collectible that is not physical.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, there's a lot of overlap. You can start to see that trading card games can work better as digital trading card games, and they can be more accessible, and you can play against your friends all over the world at any moment in time digitally. It's interesting to see the ownership of the trading cards on the blockchain, and digital ownership is a very interesting topic. If you think about, you know, one version of the future looks like VR, AR, implemented integrated reality, where we have digital real estate and digital based real estate based businesses, where we live in a digital, physical, virtual realm, like Decentraland is doing. All of these things can't happen without the blockchain. For example, if you've ever seen Ready Player One or read the book.
Both of the above.
Yes, something like that could not exist without some kind of blockchain-like anonymous or censorship-resistant currency that we're starting to develop today. So I think, you know, the main point here is that we're experimenting, and I think everyone is. But the real use case appears to be somewhere in the future where digital real estate and the convergence of digital and physical in virtual reality becomes a real place where you can make a living and experience real experiences.
For both of you, in terms of these cards, something I've never totally understood. Let's say both of you disappear into the Caribbean, never seen from again. Do these cards like endure forever without your intervention? Like,
oh, yeah.
Can we expect that in 100 years, someone could still be owning a Pepe card that they acquired at an auction in 2018?
The beautiful thing about it is that in, you know, in the future or at any time right now, someone could tap into our smart contract, build a game on top of it, totally outside of anyone involved in the original Pepe Dapp trading cards, but utilize all of the things that we've built so far to build something else. And I think that's, you know, obviously the beauty of what all of these projects are kind of pushing for on the blockchain is that these things obviously are forever in existence as long as the owner of those assets holds the private key.
Okay, so I'm a kind of a latecomer to crypto. So like my experiences in like Pepe world are much more of the like Gamergate era. What does Pepe mean to you? And also, what does it mean that you're collecting memes of a very specific era? And it's like news, political cycle, like these cards that are of like a crypto personality of today. What does it mean to focus on these things?
Yeah, that's a good point about like capturing time. That's probably my core attraction to, you know, there's other crypto like collectibles even before this, obviously, and there's CryptoKitties and many, many others actually.
Yeah.
And you collect with it, when it comes to like what we did different, is we wanted to say, let's capture memes instead of kitties. And these memes can be really in the moment kind of things, right? So we have like a Satoshi frog, and then we have
a vitamin boot something. I remember seeing
vitamin Butera. Yeah, yeah,
that's Mark a good Zucker, Pepe, Elon Moist.
Yeah,
that's a great one.
John McCaffey,
Frog McCaffey. You gotta be on the frog theme. But the idea is you capture these like, you know, funny stories, right? Especially so it's like memes within memes. We have this crypto community that has its own like jokes about the memes that show up in the community. And we can kind of capture that moment and put it into our forum. And like we were saying earlier, the cool thing about Ethereum is you basically have this place on this, you know, this contract, and it says who owns what. And if like this contract can exist as long as Ethereum's existing, right? And it's safe to use it. You capture time, and then you put it in a capsule that can last, you know, where in traditional like Pokemon or whatever, you might have a digital card game online, but if that website goes down, then you lose all your cards. I mean, part of the inspiration for Ethereum was that Vitalik had lost his like in-game, you know, skins or whatever in World of Warcraft. And he was very angry about that idea. And, you know, then imagined making Ethereum a place where you can keep your tokens within different environments as long as you hold that private key, right? So we can do stuff like that. And in this case, we're working with artists, and artists can come to our platform and we can come up with fun ideas and issue a one meme and only have 100 of those. And there's only 100 to exist on this platform, right?
It's sometimes good for me to remember that the entire Ethereum utopia is the vision of a like 21-year-old who's angry at a video game. That can help focus me on when I don't get it. I go, oh, okay, this is like the vision of a person whose primary reference point is video game worlds.
That's really interesting. I love that thought.
Okay, so this show is not investment advice. Anyone who's listened to the show knows that we're pretty terrible at trading. But I do like to ask people, what's in your bag? What are you excited about? What are you staring at in your portfolio apps these days?
I more or less just follow Bitcoin, you know, and of course, like things like Ethereum. But I'm interested in a smaller project called Ravencoin, where these guys are kind of coming up with Counterparty 2.0. It's a token, a security token, or blockchain. Ravencoin's its own blockchain, and I think it's pretty interesting. Got some guys from Overstock, Bruce Fenton. If you're not familiar, check him out on Twitter. Pretty cool guy that manages and has been in the security, not only the securities market, but also in the Bitcoin world for a long time now. So I'd recommend checking out Ravencoin. I'm not sure about the trading. I would not recommend investing, but I would say it's a pretty cool project.
Yeah.
A lot of miners like it. It came up with this idea called X16R, which is like a rotating algorithm. Long story short, they try to do something different, and it attracted a lot of people.
Randy?
I mean, I think I'm pretty boring. I love Bitcoin, and I would love to see what it becomes. But other than that, I would say if I had to choose one cool project, I would say Mana and Decentraland. They have first mover advantage in this Ready Player One utopia.
You guys both have worked on Whale Reports, right?
Yeah. So Whale Reports is the baby of Coin Yeezy and Icebergy, two friends of mine.
I think I subscribe to Whale Reports. What has it been like being involved in like covering crypto and like people wanting you to write about their projects / sort of evaluating what should come out in something like that? I've personally found I do several podcasts on different topics. Like crypto people seeking coverage are by far the most aggressive and like most disorganized in their thoughts. I probably get 10 times the email and like half of it I can barely read.
It's crazy, right? Well, as far as like what we're trying to do with Whale Reports at the moment is build this kind of open contributor platform where, you know, Aaron, you could come on Whale Reports and publish your blog and we kind of get this cross-pollination mm-hmm. of putting our stuff like a, you know, Medium has like Hacker Noon. It's literally, that was actually the inspiration.
Yeah.
Hacker Noon.
Of
crypto.
Shouts to Medium, sponsors of the show, our partners.
Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah. So like I write on Hacker Noon and sometimes about Bitcoin and sometimes I just go there and kind of use it. A lot of cool stuff surfaces there. And Whale Reports was basically inspired by that. We wanted to be the crypto version of that. It's a little saturated there. And, you know, the hardest part about it is like, okay, how do you make money? Well, luckily it's a blog and it's pretty cheap to maintain. And it's a lot of just like community contribution. And that's what we're doing. But there's a lot of bigger ideas that come with it. Like, how do we, now can we create new communication methods? And of course, like we do like magazine and email, we're starting an email campaign and all these standard things, but coming up with like, how can we allow people to kind of build up their own personal brands within a brand, right? And eventually do things like events and build this network of people that can actually work together, cross-pollinate, share ideas, maybe start businesses together. We have a meeting coming up where we're going to do some planning and come up with some new ideas with how we can be more effective in our news delivery. How can we get good sponsors? Like you said, there's a lot of people coming in that, you know, it's just like, you could get 100 emails and they're all worthless or like just basically scam, outright scams or something, right?
Yeah.
It's true. We've experienced it and it's hard to sift through all that. So like building a good network where, you know, if you have to run an advertising model or you have to like pay your bills, like find ways of doing that in like a transparent, ethical, kind of open, as far as an open source community, this is as close as it can get at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Until we start putting stuff on the blockchain, and which is actually an idea we have, but it's kind of just learning as we go and just meeting as many people as we can and growing our network. That's been a big value added for Whale Reports.
Yeah, I mean, there's this really weird media situation with crypto right now where because I guess Facebook is now taking ads again, but Facebook was not taking ads. Google's not taking ads. Most of these places where ad dollars naturally flow have crypto bans, even MailChimp. So there's this kind of alternative economy that I assume will emerge. But right now it's kind of, it's pretty like rudimentary.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of shows you where things are shifting to, where marketing is different. And Randy is like literally a genius in the sense of like marketing from the grassroots, like using, you know, when you go to do pay ads now, it's a lot different. People use ad blocks. You have bans now and like censorship and with these big data parties, right? And that's where like having a Bitcoin network and being able to transfer Bitcoin to pay for ads and doing it peer-to-peer even is going to start to happen more and more. So there's a lot of stuff going on and Bitcoin stimulating it.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for this interview.
Thanks for having us. This was awesome.
Where can people who want to find Honeyminer find it?
So you can check out our projects at honeyminer.com, on Twitter at @GetHoneyMiner.
Yeah.
And then at PepeDap for PepeDap and PepeDap.com.
How soon are we going to get this Mac version? I'm waiting for this Mac version.
Oh, man. If we had, I just made a joke yesterday. If I had a Bitcoin for every time I was asked that, I'd have all the Bitcoin.
Okay.
We're working on that basically as soon as we can. At the moment, we've got that, and we're going to also offer it on Linux. So it's in the works, and we're going to do some stuff through our channels, like whether it's Telegram or Twitter, to keep everybody updated with the progress of this. So you can check out our website as well. ask.honeyminer.com is kind of our open forum for feature requests and troubleshooting and things like that. We're gonna start pushing out more updates in that manner and let everybody know when that Mac's coming.
We had a big Google push today, so Google kind of put us in the forefront of everything and kind of knocked us out. So all of our development power is working right now to get things back up and running smoothly.
Scaling.
I'll admit that I got a 504 on Honeyminer right before this episode, but I didn't want to ruin the vibes by like starting off the interview with you guys have a 504. I was like, I'll just let them deal with this after the interview.
So yeah, but I think if I had a prediction market on when Mac OS comes out, I would say Q4
Ooh.
2018 or Q1 2019.
Okay, I'm taking that straight to Augur.
That's cool. Yeah, if for people listening, check it out. HoneyMiner just got pushed on CoinDesk, and that caused a kind of a ripple effect on Google. And right now, if you Google Bitcoin, HoneyMiner's article is showing up as one of the first news tabs there or snippets. So we are getting a lot of traffic, and we've been doing our best to keep up the website. We've done a pretty good job, but we've definitely had some downtime, and we're working to keep that going now.
I wish you the best. I think you've made a great product. So come back on and tell me how it's gone in the future sometime, yeah?
Absolutely.
All right. Later, guys.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Thursday, July 26th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,210.
And that was Coin Talk. Thanks to our editor, James Nicholson. Thanks to our sponsors, Medium and the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast. Thanks to my co-host, Jay Kang, our guests, Coin Yeezy and Crypto Randy Marsh. We'll be back next week. If you want to get in touch, send us an email, hi@cointalk.show.